Morning, everybody. My name's Greg. I'm one of the pastors here at Fairhaven, and it's good to be with you here this morning. If you're new around here, our church is a multi-site church, and we are in five different locations. We have this location here in Hudsonville. We have one in Jamestown, one over in Byron Center, one in Granville, and our newest one is up in the Walker area. And just a quick update on the Walker church. It's been a difficult plant for us, and planting, having children, it can be hard. And this one's been hard for us, and I want to say thanks to all of you here at Fairhaven that have been praying for that. A whole raft of people from Fairhaven have been volunteering up there. Somewhere around 18 to 20 different people are making their way up there to help out with this plant. And during the time that we were planting that one, we actually had the resignation of our pastor that was up there. And we just a couple weeks ago installed a new pastor. I was up there for the installation of that pastor. Wally Harrison is our new pastor up there, and the energy is growing. The excitement for ministry up there is on the rise, and so we're pretty excited about where this is going. And keep praying for it, but we really feel like this plant has turned the corner. So we're grateful for that. Hey, this morning we're in a series that we're calling Giants, and this artwork actually was done by a member of our church, which I think is pretty cool that one of our own members had this dream of drawing this up and drew this up for us, and so we're grateful for the artists that are among us. So today I want to start with a story as we think about, even last week, as Tara was talking about fears, the stuff that we fear, and a story that happened a long time ago. My son David, he's 23 now, but at that time he was 16, maybe 17 years old. The two of us were in a 160-acre parcel down in the Allegan area, and we were turkey hunting, and it was his turn up. He had the gun, and we were walking through the middle of this parcel together, and I noticed, sort of just picked something up about 100 yards away from us, looking through the trees, and I could see three large figures making their way our direction, and it was aggressive. And what they were three really large dogs, and I was like, whoa. You don't typically walk through the woods and see large dogs making their way in your direction aggressively. And for those of us that spend a lot of time in the outdoors, every once in a while you run into a pack of dogs that are out in the woods. And this particular group, the closest house to us was over a quarter mile away. And that house actually didn't own those dogs, because I know the guy. And I'm like, I don't know where they came from. I don't know if these were just dogs that ran away and formed a pack. And they do once in a while, and they'll hunt down deer like wild wolves out there. But they're making their way our way, and aggressively, and I could see them coming, and I was like, ugh, I don't have any way to protect myself, but I got a 16-year-old boy here, and I looked over at him, and he already had the gun shouldered. And I was like, all right. And he goes, Dad, you want the gun? And I said, no, just don't miss, man, don't miss, all right? Somewhere in some hunting magazine, that's how you turn a man into a boy, just don't miss, guy. And then I did what probably most of us would do. I just yelled, you know, threw my arms up in the air to look bigger than I really am. And I just yelled, and it slowed the dogs down. But when they stopped with one of these like three charge bounces and stood their ground for a minute before they ran off. And I'm like, whew, you know, like, phew, I'm glad they're gone. And now it's weird walking into the woods, wondering where they're at, you know, every time you go out there. And so just a couple of days ago, actually, I was out on the same property, and we're 7-8 years later, I'm on the same property, and I walked out of the barn that's there. It's a 20 by 40 barn that we store some equipment on, and so I'm stepping out of the barn, and the threshold to the door had actually come off, and so I picked up the threshold on the way out, and I'm looking at it and wondering, do I have the tools to put this thing back on? And I suddenly looked up and noticed, you can kind of feel that. Here come two dogs, big dogs, running down the path straight at me. And I'm like, who raises dogs in Allegan? What are people doing here? Like, right? These dogs are aggressive. The hair is up on their, this thing's got a low psychotic growl coming out of it. They're not barking. And I'm like, this is trouble. And so I had a choice. Do I jump back in the barn and wait this thing out? I didn't have any other weapon than a threshold, a 3-foot piece of wood. And so I did what I just thought was logical, and I slammed the side of this barn with it, and it's made out of tin, and so it made this racket. I threw the board up and above my head, and I screamed at the dogs like I was flat losing my mind, like screaming at them. And the dogs did that same thing. They stopped, stood their ground for a minute. And then if you've ever heard of a dog tucking tail and running, I was so glad the dogs tucked their tail down, and I ran at them because now I knew I got them afraid. Ran at them screaming, wildly flailing this thing above my head. Looked like a lunatic, and I was glad it worked. Because if it didn't, I was going to tuck tail and run myself, right? Jump back inside of the barn, and then I didn't know what, because my phone was out in the car. I go, this could be a long time before Kathy goes, I wonder where Greg is, right? Not cool. Not cool at all. In fact, for me, that experience, I'm like, I'm not a big cat fan, but I might get a bumper sticker saying I love cats if this keeps up. One more time, right? So when we get afraid, we've been told for years that one of two things will happen to you. You're either going to fight, you're either going to throw the board up above your head and just kind of scream and yell, hoping it works, or you're going to tuck tail and run. This thing called flight, fight or flight. And then recently they came up with a third category, and we all know it's true. It's like, absolutely, that's true. And it's called freeze. Like in the face of danger, in the face of something large enough, looming, daunting enough to just take you out, to wreck you, to destroy you, we can freeze. It's a diagnosis that just lays you down and you don't even think about getting up. You just lay there. It's a depression that sets in and you just resign yourself to it and you shut off the lights and ride it out in the dark. It's a conversation that you know you probably should have to try to restore something that you know is absolutely broken, but you're just paralyzed at the thought of even entering into that conversation, and so you don't have it. It's a story that is your story, that you never wished was your story, but it came kicking in the door on you, and there was nothing you could do about it. You were the victim of it, and now the thought of it, you don't know what to do with it. You don't know how to handle it. You don't know what, and it can make you feel like, I'm paralyzed in this situation. I don't know how to respond, and so I don't. It could be your children that are making decisions, maybe even adult children that are making some decisions, and you're watching the road that they're on, and you're knowing from years of experience the leverage of life itself and your life experiences. This is not going to turn out well. This is not going to go well. I can see where this is headed, and yet you feel handcuffed. You feel like, is there anything that can be done? Is there anything that could be said? And you say nothing. We do nothing sometimes. Sometimes the giant needs to fall. Sometimes that giant needs to come down. It is too large. It is too daunting. It is too loud. It is too big to let stand any longer, because something's going to fall. And if it's not the giant, it's you, it's me, it's someone that we really love, and this giant needs to come down. And we've been there. Some of us right here today, we are there, and we are in week 3 of this series where we're talking about giants, and today I want to talk about just that. Can the giant fall? Can we take a giant down? Can the giant actually be overcome, this thing that we face? One, 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 16. This is what it says there. For 40 days, the Philistines came forward, evening and every morning and evening and took his stand. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and he took his stand. And this Philistine that we're talking about, this guy is not just a normal guy. This is a giant of a man. They called him Goliath, this name sort of given to him, a 9 foot tall giant of a man who was head to toe armor, who carried a spear that had an iron head on it that if used on you, it would look like a turkey flew through you. I mean, this guy was enormous. If you've ever seen the movie 300, if you watched it and or even know the story of 300 Spartans that stood their ground against one onslaught after another, after another, after another. This ferocious fighting group, oh, he would have belonged in the ranks of that, only he would have been towering above every single one of them that were in the ranks of that. A dude that looks like somehow he's given a growth hormone all the way through his life, when he didn't actually need it, to the point where he became massive and took steroids as an adult. This guy is enormous and daunting and huge. Can he come down? And it says that he's taking a stand every morning and every evening. He's in this valley taking a stand every morning and every evening. Like, why? What's going on here? Well, what's going on here is he's taunting the army of Israel. Not into a battle, your army against our army, but your best man against me. Send them. I don't care which one. Send anyone you want. And this is a winner-takes-all sort of thing. And you can see what's going on. This giant's got to go. This giant has to fall. This guy needs to go down. And the question is, how? Or maybe who, and quite possibly if, can this giant actually drop? And so there's three options going on when you're facing something like that that can stir a fear in you. Like, I don't want to go down there. Do you want to go down? Who's going down? Who's going to fight this guy? Because this guy, somebody needs to go down because he needs to go down. Who's doing it? You have three options. Somebody can fight. But we got a problem here, because flailing a board over your head and slamming it against this side of the building is not going to make this dog tuck tail and run. Ain't going to happen. So who? How about flight? Is that going to work? Well, that's not what they're up to. They're not fleeing. Oh, as we read a bit more of the scripture here in a moment, we can see that they fled from the battle line. They stepped back enough just to get their distance. They had that desire to flee, but if they actually picked up, tucked tail, and ran, they would be pursued by this giant and by the whole group of the Philistine army. Flight, ultimate flight's not an option. So now what? Well, what is freeze? Freeze. Do nothing. One day after another, we read it for 40 days. He's throwing smack at them. He's mocking their God. And they stand and do nothing. I get it. I think we get it. I think we do. Because all of us have faced stuff in life, faced stuff, and maybe you're facing something right now and you're going, man, this is so big. I don't really want to talk about it. I just wish it would go away, but it just keeps showing up every day. Every time I turn around and I look toward the mirror, there it is again, staring in the mirror. It's there again. I can't get away from it. And we can either pick up a rock and do something about it. Running, there's no sense in running from it because it chases us, it's faster than us, and freezing is something a whole lot of us, I've been there, a whole lot of us do. Let's read the rest of the story here. Now the Israelites had been saying, do you see this man? Keeps coming out. He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt the family from taxes in Israel. David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, this is what will be done for the man who kills him. David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth. Even here, you can feel the words of the king saying, fight? Forget it. Flight? Not asking for that, but I am saying freeze. Freeze. Do not respond to this situation. And where this took place actually matters. We're talking about a valley that's called the Valley of Elah. And if we can look at this map right here, we'll get a bit of a picture of what's going on, and this matters. If you look at the left side of this map, you can see the five cities of the Philistine Confederation. They're out there on the coast. They're coastal people. If you look toward the right of the map, you can see the Dead Sea over there, but Bethlehem, Jerusalem, they are up in the mountain regions over there. And between them lies this thing called the Valley of Elah. This is where they're at. The army of Israel's there. Like, why are they there? And the Philistines are coming that direction. Why? And what's so important about this valley, right? Like, because if it's just a fight for that valley, who cares? We don't need the valley. If you're Jerusalem, if you're Bethlehem, if you're the people of Israel, we don't necessarily need the valley. Not a big deal. But what's going on that this valley is so important? It's not the valley itself. It's what's happening in the valley, because sometimes you need to stop a giant. And you want to stop the giant there before he ends up over here. If you look at the map there, you can see from the shore, they are making their way somewhere. The Philistine army is making their way somewhere, and where happens to be, next stop is Bethlehem, next stop is Jerusalem. David came from the Bethlehem region, made his way over to his brothers that are standing there, part of the army, said, hey, Dad sent me with some bread, some cheese to hang out with you guys. And he hears this giant taunting the army of Israel, hurling insults at them. And he knows what's going on. Somebody has to drop this giant. Who's going to do it? Why? Because if we don't, the next stop on this journey from the coastal region, they're already here. Next stop is kicking in the doors of Dad's home. He's kicking in the doors of Jerusalem. He'll be kicking down our gates. He'll be, that army's on the way to take us out. That'd be a little bit like for us. If we're sitting here going there, there's coming off the coast here of the shores of Lake Michigan in the Holland area, there's a group that's coming. They're over in Vreeland. And we're like, who cares about Vreeland, right? Like, where's Vreeland? And who knows anybody in Vreeland? And Jeremy does, right? That's where you're from. So Jeremy cares because Jeremy's there. We care a little bit, but like, we care a whole lot, right? If they're coming from Holland through Vreeland to our doorstep, to kick in the door. We've got something coming, a real threat that threatens to undo us, to take us down, that's on the way. Let's meet up in the Valley of Elah, and somebody has to do something about this giant. And David says, take heart, let nobody be dismayed anymore. I will step down in there because this giant needs to be taken out. Now, for those of us here today that are already feeling And I know this can be a heavy thing, maybe not for all of us sitting here, but for some of us sitting here, you're already feeling it going, I'm feeling like God is moving right now on me and he's tugging at me and I know what my giant is. I know what it is. I know the addiction that has been kicking at the door, and I know the struggle that I've been having. I know this anger that built up inside of me, and it grew to the point like sometimes I just lose it for no reason at all. I know that has to be dealt with. I know that we need to talk about what has been going on, and I know that I have to face up to this stuff, but I'm standing like the ranks of the army of Israel, and I'm standing on the hillside saying, I don't want to fight for this, because I'm fearful. I know I can't run from it. And I've just been in freeze mode. And I want you to know that this is a two-part sermon. And we are going to go after that at a high level next week. We're going to go after that. I just have a step first that I want us to step into today that I think is a 1-2 on this one. Because this is a big deal. David didn't show up on day one. It was 40 days before they actually responded on this one. And if we could just take next steps today to go, okay, I'm just going to try to take the anxiety down, that it is possible that giants can drop, including this one I'm facing. It's possible. And just breathe in and breathe out. Now, think with me, just logically think with me, that giants don't start giants, right? They don't start massive. I think about 1879. It was July 19 of 1879. The largest baby reportedly ever to have been born was born on that day. Women, hold on to your man at this second. The baby was 22 pounds, all right? I'm like, are you kidding me? 22 pounds. You know, I'm a man and I even feel that one. And I'm like, way back then, you know, it's like, did they have C-sections? I hope for Anna's sake, that's her name, that they did. But a 22-pound baby boy was born. That's huge. 28 inches tall, this baby was. We might say long because they lay down, but I think at 22 pounds and 28 inches, this one came out upright, right? And just ready, already walking. Like, this is a huge baby. This is a giant of a baby, right? And we think about how big that baby was. 22 pounds, 28 inches. That's huge, and it does not compare at all to the size of a 9-foot dude wielding a spear large enough to make it look like a turkey flew through you. I mean, this guy, this baby pales in comparison, but every giant started somewhere. It reminds me of a story I heard one time that every single one of us has two dogs inside of us. And just because we're not liking dogs a whole lot today, let's go with cats, all right? So two cats inside of us. Think about that. One that's just soft and loves to be petted and comes when you call it, sits and fetches for you, right? Sounds a lot like a dog, all right? But it's a cat. So go with me on this. So you got this nice little cat here, domestic thing, and you have another one that has stripes on it. It's just little. It's got stripes on it, but it's got pretty big paws, and it purrs, and it's kind of cuddly, too. And you look at them and go, two cats. One's a tiger. And both of those live inside of us. Which one is going to survive? The tiger or the domestic cat? Which one's going to survive? It's pretty simple. It's the one you feed. That's the one that's going to live. The one you feed. And if you feed that tiger long enough, it's not going to stay small and it's not going to stay really cuddly, right? It'll grow and the thing starts getting bigger and bigger. And eventually it will turn into something that looks an awful lot like, because it is the most ferocious land predator that is on planet Earth. We have a biting force as human beings of 150 PSI, pounds per, you know, square inch. That's us, 150 pounds. A tiger's biting force is 1,000 PSI. Crush your skull like that. Slow twitch muscle allows this thing to explode with such ferocity, it can leap from a standstill 30 feet. That's a big leap. It has the power to kill equally in water and on land because it can swim or it can run. This is a monstrous, monstrous animal. And we wonder sometimes, because we hear the stories of people that invite tigers into their homes, and then you hear about some of them that get mauled by a tiger, and you're like, what are they doing? Why would they bring the most predatory animal on planet Earth that's walking on the Earth, why would they bring that into their home? And we all know there's nobody that goes out into the wild, catches a tiger, and goes, hey, I think I'll make a pet out of this. Nobody does that. It doesn't start there. Nobody does that. What they do is they start with this cute little kitten. And they pet it, and it purrs, and it grows, and it gets bigger, and eventually it has the power to undo you with one bite. One bite. And we know where this is going, right? No giants start small. No big problems that we face start little. I mean, start big. They don't start big. They start small somewhere. It's like Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said these words. He said that if you pull this up, here it is. If you sow a thought, you reap an action. If you sow an act, you reap a habit. If you sow a habit, you reap a character. If you sow a character, you reap a destiny. Sow a thought, just the thought. You reap an action. Sow an act. It's just one thing you did. You could reap a habit. You sow that habit and you're going to reap a character. You sow that character and you will reap the story of your entire life. It'll become your story. It'll become who you are. Nothing starts large. It starts small. No giant got to be a giant without it going from a thought to an act, from an act to a habit, from a habit to your character, from your character into your destiny. And I know all kinds of people that this is true of. In so many good ways, right? Not just bad ways, in so many good ways. They had this thought about where they wanted to see their life go. And they started acting on that one act at a time. And eventually they formed a brand new habit. And this habit gave way to their character, began to shape their character. And that character began to form the destiny of their life in such a powerful, good way. And we also, sadly, we know the other side of it. And we've tasted both of those, that you take the wrong thought and allow it to go into a action, and you take that action and keep repeating it. It'll become a habit. You repeat that habit long enough, and finally it becomes your character, begins to shape who you are. And when it does that, it begins to form your destiny. And when it gets to that level, that thing is a giant. And we look at it and say, I never thought it was going here, but now this giant needs to fall. It needs to come down. I think about my 30s, and I didn't even recognize this as something that it was a thought I had that went into a habit eventually that found its way into my actions on such a level. It was who I was. I was in my 30s, and I was trying to figure out how to keep everybody happy, everybody. And I was working on that because I wanted everybody to like me. I wanted nobody to be displeased with me. I wanted to just continue to keep all the people around me in a place where everybody said, Greg, you're doing a great job. And so I worked and worked and worked and worked and worked super hard and was exhausting myself. If I ever didn't feel like I did something well, it killed me, man. It just killed me. This perfectionism, it was a giant that was standing in front of me, but I had to look deep into the mirror and say, what is this all about? What is it? And you think about the profession I chose. Are you kidding me? I chose to be a pastor. I chose to get up in front of people every single week. I chose to put myself on display every week so that the church could go home and sit around the dinner table and go, what'd you think of a sermon today? You know, so, well, Pastor Greg, it was okay today, but last week, Jeremy was amazing. You know, it's like, so we're putting ourselves, why would I choose this profession? Why would I, actually, truth is, here's the truth. This was so real for me. I chose not to preach early on. Like, I'm not going to preach. I don't want to do that. I don't want to stand up in front every single week. I'm going to go over here where I can really, all of that. Eventually, I'm facing this thing going, what am I going to do with it? And I had to look deep into the mirror and say, what's going on? What's going on inside? I had to deal with that and not just continue to act and have these habits, have this stuff make me lay awake at night if something went wrong or didn't go quite right. I had to deal with it, to face that giant, to say, I think this thing can come down. I just don't know how. I don't know how. I don't know what we're facing here today. But I know there came a point for me where I had to think, this thing can come down and somebody's got to pick up a rock. And I'm going to pick it up. And I'm going to have the right conversations, and I'm going to do some deep soul searching. I'm going to do some praying, and eventually what it led to is letting this rock fly for me, and just letting it fly and understanding that I just want to please God with my life. And I could tell you way more on that story, but I became more concerned with just being right with Him and pleasing Him than I was about pleasing others around me, and was able to let go of this thing, able to take that giant down that was looming in front of me. Maybe for some of us here today, we're in a place where we're going, well, my giant's different, man. It's a physical thing that I'm dealing with. It's a physical addiction, and it is deep, and I don't know if I even dare pick that rock up. I'm asking today just to take the next step. I'm not asking you to let it fly. I'm not asking you to say that you can take the giant down. I'm just asking you, will you pick it up? Maybe for you today, it's not even something you did. It's not even a thought you sowed. It's not even a habit that got formed. It's just that you're facing a giant that actually, it's a giant of a problem in your life because of what happened to you, and you don't know if you can ever get over it. I'm asking today, not that you take this thing down today, just asking today, can you just pick up the rock and can you begin to believe that maybe this giant can fall, because the giant actually needs to fall. It has to come down, because if it doesn't, I'm coming down. It's going to be the story of my life, and I don't want that to be the story of my life. And to actually believe today that it can come down. And I want to remind us here today who we are, because we could turn this time into a motivational speech about how you can get your life better, how you can do it on your own, how you can pick up the rock, and how you become the person that finally takes that giant down. Or we could remember who we are. Remember who we belong to. Remember that everything is possible, because there was a day that they put Jesus Christ to the cross, that He offered up His life, that He breathed His last and He died, and they thought that it is over. There's nothing that can be done about this now. But we belong to the people that actually believe and know that Jesus Christ was laid into a tomb, and He burst forth from that tomb victorious over it, and He lived again. And if He can defeat the grave, I'm just asking, can a giant come down? And I believe everything in me that there is not a problem in this room. We're still living. We're still breathing. We still have air in our lungs. There is not a problem in this room. There is not one thing that any of us is facing that looms as large as the tomb itself. And the tomb gave way. So this week, I'm just asking, in this moment, even if you have to say, I'm gonna rest on Greg's faith in this because I don't have it. That's enough. Pick up the rock and hold on to it this week and come back next week. And we're gonna talk about how to take that giant out.